give the first talk today on epigenetic variation in tissue culture. One thing I think that's interesting as we go through these different talks today is the way that some of these diverse phenomena have kind of come together in fundamental underlying mechanisms. I've worked on tissue culture for a number of years, from when I was in the University of Minnesota with Dr. Phillips. Tissue culture, of course, is used extensively in the plant transformation process as well as in propagating plants. And one of the things that was seen early on is that when you regenerate plants from tissue culture, you end up with a lot of heritable phenotypic variation. So on this picture over here, there's different types of kernel mutants and seedling mutants that are segregating in a qualitative fashion that have come out of tissue culture. These are seed-derived progenies of regenerated plants. You also get quantitative variation. There's evidence of transposon activation and a lot of cytogenetic abnormalities, chromosome breakages, rearrangements, and so on. One of the things that we published about 15 years ago was results from my dissertation work, where we showed that when you look at the DNA methylation in plants regenerated from tissue culture, and at this point in time, DNA methylation was the main mark for chromatin. When you look at DNA methylation patterns in plants regenerated from tissue culture, you see a lot of variation. So in this blot over here, we have a methylation-sensitive enzyme, HEPA2. And these are different regenerated, progeny of regenerated plants from tissue culture. All of these plants came from the same culture lines. And one thing you can see, here's the control plant. You have a higher band, so you have more methylation in this particular plant. And all of the regenerated plants have a lower band, indicating they've lost methylation at least one position. And another thing you can see is that each of these regenerant-derived progenies have a different methylation pattern. So not only do you have an average reduction in methylation, but you have kind of a stochastic range in the type of variation that you see. This is with one particular sequence here. This is another probe over here. On this side of the panel, we now are looking at individual plants that are derived, or individual progenies that are derived from one self plant. And so in this case, again, we have the control. And in this family, now you see that there's two new alleles, two new epialleles that we're detecting by the southern blot methylation analysis. And you can see that those are segregating as a qualitative locus here. You have the homozygous for one type, the heterozygote, homozygote for the other type. So not only do you have these methylation changes that occur in the primary transgenics, but when you look at the progenies that are derived from those are stably inherited. So when we discovered this, we proposed this kind of simple model that the stress of tissue culture, either due to the hormones or nutrient imbalance or some other type of characterized stress, results in chromatin modifications at that point indicated by DNA methylation, and that those types of chromatin modifications could result in heritable genetic variation itself, or maybe transposon derepression that also results in other alleles. There's been a fair amount of work in various species, and I'm not going to talk about all the other species today. I'm just going to talk about some of our more recent work that provides more evidence for transposon derepression in tissue culture and provides some evidence of novel allelic variation that's due to epigenetic silence in tissue culture. Some of the mutants that we worked with most recently were identified based on their white cob color. So this is an easy phenotype to identify, and the pathway was well known. There's a P1 transcription factor that turns on a pathway, and then you have the enzymes that result in this flobaphene pigmentation that gives the red cob color. So we knew that by looking at these white cob mutants, we had a number of genes we could look at, and they were well characterized, and we knew their function and sequence. When we did the allelism test, we had an interesting result. One of the alleles was an allele at the C2 locus, this enzymatic locus, and five of the alleles were at the P1 locus. The P1 locus, the PWR allele that was in the original plants that were put into tissue culture, is actually a complex locus. So up here we have one repeat unit. You have the exons, you have a large intron here, and the third exon down here. But in the PWR allele, you have multiple tandem repeats of that same locus. So if you do an EMS mutagenesis, you'll rarely see a PW W allele or a white Cobb allele coming from a PWR stock, because there's evidence that multiple of these copies are functional. It's not known if all of them are functional, but at least more than one are functional. So it's a rare target to induce mutagenesis, for instance, using chemical like EMS. So that made it even more interesting that you had five independent mutations that resulted from tissue culture, because you were actually getting an increased rate of mutation relative to another locus, the C2 locus at the P locus. We looked at this locus in a number of, or at these mutants in a number of ways, looked at transcription and so on. What I'm showing here again is a southern blot where we're looking at methylation patterns. And on this southern blot, now I have four of the five alleles that I have discussed. The lanes that are labeled M are ones that are mutant where the Cobb is completely white. I have one over here labeled L, we call it leaky or a weak allele, where you actually have a pink Cobb, substantially reduced Cobb color, but not white. And then we have the wild type. And you can see here in the wild type state, you have less methylation, you have a lower molecular weight band. And in all of the mutants, we had a substantial increase in methylation with this particular probe and the enzyme HEPA2. And in the leaky, or the weak allele, we had substantial methylation, but you had probably at least one of the copies with reduced methylation that still gave some amount of function. We went through probably over 100 different restriction sites using this approach and narrowed in on this region of the intron 2 where there was a diagnostic SAL1 site and HEPA2 site that showed this differential methylation between the mutant and the wild type alleles. We did bisulfite sequence analysis across this region, and each peak here, especially down here, indicates the potential position of a cytosine. So in the wild type, you had very little methylation across most of this region that are surrounding this HEPA2 and SAL1 site. But in the mutant, you had a dramatic increase in methylation across the region. So it wasn't only these two restriction sites that changed, but there was a stretch of a few hundred base pairs where you had a dense increase in methylation. There's random or varied changes in other parts of the gene, but this is the only part of the P locus where you had a consistent and substantial increase in methylation across a specific region. These just list all the cytosines. When you break it down into the types of methylation, you can see that the methylation in the CG context increased dramatically in the white Cobb and the weak mutant. And the CXG sequence increased dramatically, but the asymmetric sites showed no difference in methylation. So this indicates that there's somehow the methylation is related to the maintenance of CG sites, and there isn't anything that's resulting in methylation in the asymmetric context. We also showed by crossing that this allele is not paramutagenic, so that's also consistent with there being no asymmetric methylation. One thing that's difficult to see on the previous slide, I showed the increase in methylation. In the weak or leaky allele, it appears from our sequencing that there's one copy that has no methylation, and the other copies have substantial methylation. So when we did the bisulfite sequencing, we did a number of different strands, and you didn't have just random methylation across the sites. You either had a strand that was unmethylated or a higher percentage of strands that were heavily methylated in that weak allele, indicating that somehow one allele had, one of the repeats of that PWR allele had escaped the silencing process and now heritably gave this weak phenotype. We don't know exactly what happened to cause this. It's still something we're interested in. But one possible model is that that in tissue culture, there's some type of a transient RNA that was produced that established maybe silencing across the entire region. And then after cell division and after the RNA went away that maybe initiated this process, you ended up with only methylation in the symmetric sites and lost the potential asymmetric methylation that you might get if it's induced by this type of process. It's one model anyway that could explain how you get silencing across multiple repeats in the process of tissue culture. Of course, there's other types of models, but it's one possibility. Another thing that's interesting is that a paper came out fairly recently that describes a similar allele that was derived outside of tissue culture. So an allele, PWW allele, was again derived from a PWR stock in the T232 by CM37 mapping population. One thing that's interesting about this allele is that it had a similar methylation change. So now you're seeing a naturally occurring allele outside of the stress of tissue culture that occurred that seems to have the same properties, same phenotypic properties, and same methylation properties. So that's quite interesting. Another thing with this allele is that a mutant called unstable factor orange reactivates this particular wild naturally occurring allele. We also tested unstable factor orange with our tissue culture alleles, and it had the same reversion of phenotype and same change in methylation that's seen in this paper. So in this case, we have now an epi allele that's occurred, and then you have a novel type of interacting factor that can restore the function of that epi allele. Another mutation we saw was at the C2 locus. In this case, we looked at the genomic PCR. We saw there's a small insertion in this particular locus. The C2 locus has two exons and one small intron. The insertion was in one of the exons. When we looked at transcript, the insertion abolished all of the transcript from that particular C2 locus, C2 allele. And this particular insertion was quite interesting in that it was very small. It's a 42 base pair insertion that had the potential, or at least had homology, the potential to fold back on itself. And it left an 8 base pair insertion site duplication. So it had the properties of a transposon, but it's very small relative to what has been seen before. We don't know too much about this insertion. We did find homology to an insertion in an A2 allele that was in GeneBank that is a little bit longer, about 250 base pairs. Again, you can see there's an inverted repeat structure to this longer structure, and the homology to RC2 insertion is right at the end of that particular element. And when we searched through some of the genomic sequences, we found 11 genomic assemblies that also had this type of sequence. Seems to be a rare event. We in the tissue cultures we looked at, we haven't seen additional movement, so we're not sure exactly when it occurred or if it's just a rare activation of this transposon, but it's a little bit of a unique transposon we've identified that seems to have resulted in this mutation through the tissue culture process. We also, after discovering that, asked a little bit more, what about other transposons in tissue culture? And we designed an experiment where we did a tiling microarray. We had 66 different transposable elements that we identified, 38 class 1 or retrotransposon type elements, 28 class 2 cut and paste type elements. We tiled those on a microarray with a 70 base pair window, so we went across every 70 base pairs with 30 base pair overlaps. And what I'm going to show you is some results where we looked at BMS tissue cultures, black Mexican sweet tissue cultures that had been initiated over 20 years ago, so they'd been a long-term tissue culture, transferred routinely, not necessarily old tissue cultures, but very long-term cultures. We compared that to newly initiated tissue cultures. And then we also did a 5-azadeoxycytidine treatment of the newly initiated tissue cultures to see what the effect would be of reducing methylation. 5-azadeoxycytidine will have the result of reducing the methylation, especially at the CG context. And so we're trying to look at the effect of that chemical on tissue culture. The BMS cultures were just harvested directly. Our biological reps were different samples that were isolated over a period of time. In the methyltransferase inhibitor experiment, we started out with newly initiated cultures, so embryos were plated. We initiated callus cultures from those, put those into suspension cultures. Then we broke those suspension cultures into 3 independent biological replicates. And then out of each biological replicate, we took out a control sample and we treated a sample with our chemical inhibitor methylation. So in each case, we have paired samples from an original flask that came initially from one callus that was initiated from an embryo. On the left here is again a southern blot. We have the MSP1 digest and the HEPA2 digest. The HEPA2 digest is the one I want to have you look at here. It's sensitive to methylation at CG methylation at the internal C. HEPA2 cuts the CCGG sequence. Our three samples here labeled C are the control samples. And you can see there's substantially less digestion than the samples that are treated samples, our 5-ASA deoxycytidine treated samples, where you have a lot more digestion, indicating that the treatment was successful in reducing the methylation at these particular sequences. So we feel that we had a pretty good treatment with methylation. We had to use a little bit of an intermediate dose. If you give too much of a strong dose of 5-azacitidine, it really inhibits cell culture growth. So you maybe don't have as much of a reduction in methylation as you might with a mutant, but we had a pretty good reduction in methylation. The probe there is a centromere probe. Just as a general summary, 12 of 66 transposons had significantly more transcription in BMS than leaf or endosperm, so we also had leaf and endosperm RNA on here. The transposons that showed increased activation were both of the class 1 type and the class 2 types across different types of families. The one I want to give you a little more information about is this HAT transposon that we called teacup because it is a transposon that we saw upregulated in the old BMS tissue culture. This is a BMS sample here, and this is the tiling. You have a very CG-rich region at the end here, so you have a lot of signal that is probably due to the incorrect thermal properties of the probes here at one end. But as you can see, as you go along this transposon, you have evidence across the length of the transposon here for substantially more signal in the BMS than in the endosperm and the leaf, and also the callus isn't shown here, but substantially more than the young callus. That'll be on the next slide. Next slide is exactly the same series of probes for this teacup element. I should say also when we looked at the TIGER database, the teacup element is the most highly represented EST in the TIGER database, and it's only found in the samples from BMS, so it's not found in any other tissues. This is our 5-azadeoxycytidine treatment. Again, I think you have a little of thermal dynamic issues at the end here, but when you look across this part of the transposon, you have upregulation in the 5-azacitidine demethylated treatment relative to the tissue culture control that the newly initiated tissue cultures. So this was interesting as well in that, in a sense, we're interpreting this that reduction in methylation can mimic the aging of tissue culture and result in transcriptions of specific elements. We validated these results using RT-PCR. And using RT-PCR as well, we didn't see any transcription of this element in any other tissues, young callus, the untreated controls, seedlings, leaves, or endosperm. The teacup element is in the AC-TAM3 family. So AC is right here. There's been evidence from other, from previous students of Dr. Phillips of AC activation in tissue culture. So it's in the same general family as AC, but it's a unique type of element within that family. There's similar sequences in rice and sorghum that are shown here. So it's interesting that even though there's a number of transposons that are upregulated, you don't see a general upregulation of all transposons. And there's something special about this teacup element that makes it particularly sensitive to tissue culture and apparently particularly sensitive to upregulation by demethylation. This is a southern blot of the teacup element. It's a medium to low copy element, probably we're estimating 13 to 16 copies by southern blot analysis. When we put this on a back library filter, it was consistent with about 17 copies of that element. I actually haven't searched it recently now that there's substantially more genome sequence, so I have to do that. I really didn't think about that till right now. And based on the southern blot, so we have a 5' probe, an internal probe, and a 3' probe, we're estimating that there's maybe 3 to 5 putative full-length elements, but again, I should search the genome sequence and get a better answer about that. One exciting thing as well is we had a number of independent derived tissue culture lines labeled I and H here. The label doesn't matter. Each one is a different cell culture line derived from a different independent embryo. And we did transposon display with this teacup element, and we identified a line, H6 here, that had some novel bands. So we have evidence that this teacup element is moving in tissue culture. This is not the 5-azacitidine treated tissue culture. These are just independent tissue cultures from a separate experiment. So if we go back to our overall model, we now have some more information. I'm especially excited about the silenced PWW allele. It's really the first evidence of a direct epiallele coming out of tissue culture that results in a heritable phenotype, so relating a silenced allele back to a phenotypic mutant that comes out of tissue culture. It's also interesting to think about why that allele is particularly susceptible to silencing in tissue culture, why we have such a high frequency of that allele relative to other types of alleles. We have some additional evidence of transposon derepression and movement in tissue culture. Of course, in rice, for instance, with TOS17, there's lots of examples now of transposon insertions that come out of tissue culture that can result in novel alleles. So this is some additional evidence in maize. As I said, we have a lot of questions both with the PWR allele, why that's more susceptible to silencing apparently in tissue culture, and in addition to the transposons, why are certain types of transposons more susceptible to reactivation in tissue culture than others. And like I said, this teacup element seems to be particularly interesting in that we haven't seen any evidence of expression in EST libraries or RT-PCR experiments or array experiments for expression of that element. The only expression we really see is in tissue cultures either treated with 5-azacitidine or this very old BMS tissue culture, which has very high transcription of that element. We still are interested in what are the factors in tissue culture that are causing the stress that results in these chromatin modifications and these chromosome rearrangements. And as I mentioned, the PWW allele that came out of the naturally occurring population is quite interesting because it indicates that perhaps whatever is happening in tissue culture also occurs at certain points during plant development that results in the same types of allelic changes that you see. That's all I have. Is there any questions? Yes?
So your pink epiallele, is it evenly pink cell to cell, or is it little patches of intensely pigmented ones and an otherwise seen white?
It's generally evenly pink. I'd say there's a little more pigmentation towards the glooms, but it's not a cellular mosaic of color and not color.
So it's muted rather than being like pale blotched.
Right. Right. Yes.
I think the same alleles would be sensitive in different genetic backgrounds in maize. Have you tried other sort of stocks to see whether this is generally true?
I haven't tried other stocks. The field-grown material was a substantially unrelated background to what we had in tissue culture. So that would provide some evidence that it could be sensitive. My feeling would be that it's probably more the allele itself than the genetic background, but I don't know for sure.
Just wondering about whether in the future, getting after your questions, which are good, about why some are more sensitive than others, something about the surrounding context, which could be quite different in different strains.
That's right, yeah. It would be interesting. And there's certain P alleles that are just single copy as well. And this region of intron 2, as far as I can tell from other publications, also appears to be a little bit of a hotspot for transposon insertions in P alleles that are single copy. So it could be that this region has some type of structure or enhancer activity or something that predisposes it to transposon insertion as well. But it's a little hard to line up the graphs with our sequence from the previous publications. Yes?
In your tissue culture derived P allele, you show that it was inherited, it could be inherited genetically, but have you tried salting the generation after generation, like the generation to get recruited?
We've propagated it for a substantial number of generations, and I haven't seen any reversion. And similarly with the weak allele, it seems quite stable at just this light pink.